yeah, it's RS2 on KFJC. We got the fire engines of Candy Skin.
Candy Skin, oh, Candy Skin. Who don't guess your luck?
Excuse me, miss. Do you think it might be possible to turn that music down so maybe a couple of the boys could talk?
That music is for everyone, Mr. McMurphy.
Yeah, I know, but you think we might ease it down a little bit so maybe the boys didn't have to shout? Huh?
What you probably don't realize is that we have a lot of old men on this ward who couldn't hear the music if we turned it lower. That music is all they have.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
Well, good evening. It's a couple of minutes after 6 o'clock in the Greater Bay Area. Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills, and this is Thoughtline. Each week we try to tell you fun things, interesting things, things you need to know. Tonight will be no exception. Tonight we'll be talking about writing. We'll be talking about fantasy and science fiction, and we'll be talking about WesterCon. WesterCon is coming up next month, or actually 2 months away, because we're still in mayhem, July 1st through the 4th. At the Fairmont Hotel in downtown San Jose. And tonight, sitting in the studio with me, I have Glenn Glazer. Glenn, thanks for being here tonight.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And we'll probably have other people join as we go on. Tell us a little bit about the history of WesterCon.
So WesterCon started all the way back in 1948. It started out in Los Angeles, California, as a kind of picnic among some of the people who belong to the Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society. The Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society, or LOSFS as it's usually called, is this world's oldest science fiction club. And they decided to just kind of have a 4th of July picnic, and they had they went to a hotel. They decided to just have a little, you know, fun at a hotel. They asked one of their members to organize it. And the next year they said, that was fun. Let's do that again. And they did for a number of years. For the first 3 years, in fact, it was always in Los Angeles. Okay. After that, other people started to hear about the kind of fun that WesterCon was. And in 1950, it was in San Francisco, organized by a group called the Little Men, who are actually famous in Bay Area science fiction fandom. And after that, it grew and rolled, and people went from year to year. They went to different places. It's now we're in what we call a two-year bidding system. So at each convention, the members of that convention will vote to see where the convention will be 2 years from now. And it has flown all the way around the Western region. WesterCon gets its name from the Western Regional Science Fiction Convention. It's been as far northeast as Calgary, as far northwest as Vancouver. It's been in Hawaii. It's been in Vegas. It's been in El Paso. And it's been in San Diego. So that's about as far south as it's gotten, as those two places. We're now coming up on WesterCon 64.
So 64 is not 1964. It's the 64th convention.
That's right. The 64th annual.
That's amazing. So is there any other science fiction convention that's older than WesterCon?
Yeah. There's the Worldcon. Worldcon is coming up in Reno this year. I don't have the number right off the top of my head for the number of WorldCon, but it is older. It actually started. It started before the wars.
So in the 30s.
I think so. Something like that. No, maybe between the wars. No, I know there was a break for World War II, so it might have started between the wars.
Oh boy. It's. You know, there's always somebody who's older or faster or whatever. But WesterCon, the 64th annual convention, happening in San Jose this year at the Fairmont Hotel, and July 1st to the 4th. So, how did you get involved with this, Glenn?
Oh man, so you can just roll me back all the way. When I was a kid, I started reading Greek mythology as a pastime. And my parents noticed that, and my mom saw an ad in a paper for a science fiction convention. I also loved Tolkien at the time. And she said, why don't you go try this? And I loved it. And I had a great time. And the next year that I went to this particular convention, I actually wound up helping out a little bit. There were people who were watching various areas of the convention overnight. Right, and they were basically stuck by these doors overnight. So I volunteered to push a cart with donuts, you know, for these guys and coffee, so that they'd have something to, you know, to have, right? And because you know, feel sorry for somebody stuck like that. And that was a very meager beginning, but it wound up. I wound up volunteering more and more into different positions of responsibility. I run most, but not all, of the different aspects of a science fiction convention on my own. And one thing followed another. I am part of two California nonprofits, one of which is SFSFC Inc., the convention that organization sponsors WesterCon 64. And we were talking about what we wanted to do, and we said, let's bid for WesterCon. And I said, yes, let's bid for a WesterCon. And, well, you know, what happens when you volunteer like that? And that's how that's a capsule of how I wound up with this. There's actually a little stronger drive. I occasionally kid my wife about her marrying her father, because her father chaired WesterCon 3.
Oh my God!
so you know, it's like, you know, it's all in the family.
All in the family. Well, I think we're joined now by Kevin Stanley. Kevin, are you there?
Hi there.
Hi, he's joining us by phone. We've got Glenn Glazer in the studio with us. And Kevin, maybe you can introduce yourself and say what you do with WesterCon.
Well, my name's Kevin Stanley, and I am generally the website manager for WesterCon 64. My background with the organization is that our group that Glenn mentioned also hosted the 2002 World Science Fiction Convention, which was in San Jose as well, and I was the convention co-chairman. So I've been with us working on conventions here in the Bay Area since the late 1980s.
Wow. So what is WesterCon's website?
It is WesterCon 64. So it's West, con64.org, westercon64.org. And from there you can find out all sorts of information about this year's incarnation of WesterCon.
And so how did you get involved with science fiction and fantasy?
I was actually roped in by my love of the graphic series, comic book series ElfQuest back in the early 1980s. And because there were some events having to do with the conclusion of the original series, the ElfQuest run, happening at the World Science Fiction Convention in Anaheim in 1984, and I turned 19 years old during that convention. I rode the bus overnight down to Anaheim, attended my first science fiction convention, had a wonderful 5 days in Anaheim, got on the bus, went back home, and got off the bus and went straight from the bus to my first day of college, feeling a little groggy, but I had a good time.
That's great.
And it really was a wonderful experience, and I've never forgotten that sense of wonder, that's our phrase for it, that I had from that, and I've spent much of the rest of my life trying to give that back and pay it forward to other people, that sense of wonder of the community of science fiction and fantasy fandom.
So let's talk a little bit about WesterCon 64 and what are the kind of things that that people might expect to see there.
Well, I think for someone who's never been to a science fiction convention, it's best to start with kind of an overall floor plan or basics of what's around, and we can go into details from there. So when one enters a convention, there'll be a registration area. You'll be able to pick up a copy of our program book and our dining guide, which lists all of the interesting places in downtown San Jose to eat. And then from there are two basic splits. There's what we call fixed functions, which include an art show with science fiction and fantasy artists, and they will be presenting both original works right for sale. And if your budget doesn't involve, a new oil painting, then there are also prints, right, that you can get for a much more modest. And it's also three-dimensional art. And we will have docent tours of the art show. And we will have an art auction, for art pieces that are heavily bid on during the show. We occasionally also have art demos and things like that inside the art show. Next to, or in the same large ballroom as the art show, is the dealer's room. And here you can buy memorabilia, you can buy books, you can buy audio recordings and video recordings, and you can buy costume elements.
So there's lots of different things that are available in the dealer's room. Right. What else is there?
Okay.
Now, the other part of the non-fixed programming is the convention program. During the convention, which runs over a four-day period from Friday through a Monday, there are many, many panel discussions and similar program items happening around the convention where authors and artists and other fans discuss various aspects of the field of science fiction, fantasy, and related subjects, fandom itself. And these are program items. You go to them and you listen to them talk, but it's not just a lecture series. It's generally expected that the audience is interacting with people here. That's a major part of the convention happening during the day, mostly.
Isn't the other thing too about these sessions is that they're usually pretty intimate? I mean that you can kind of get up close to writers. It's not like sitting at at Dodger Stadium, you know, looking down the Jumbotron.
There's a room with 20 or 30 seats in it, perhaps, you know. I mean, maybe at our biggest event, 200, I think is the large. I'm not thinking of the main ballroom, but all of the program rooms themselves. These are relatively small events, and the authors are, mostly authors are fans themselves, or they wouldn't actually be interested in coming. It's a community atmosphere, or a collegial, and this is an opportunity to get up and talk to these people, and they talk with you, and you get to meet them. And there's very few authors I know who will turn down being asked if you to buy them a drink. It's a very. This is not an event where, okay, here is a person up on a faraway stage to be worshipped at a distance, and then queue up and pay large amounts of money to get their signatures, you know, to their autographs. It doesn't work that way.
And it is not just with formal programming. One of our guests of honor, Patricia McKillop, who's a well-known author, winner of the World Fantasy Award, has written literally scores of novels. The themes of music and harping and food all pervade her work. So in our hospitality suite, we're going to have a tea for Miss McKillop and anyone else who chooses to show up, accompanied by a harpist who happens to be Moira Grayland, who's the daughter of famous science fiction author Marion Zimmer Bradley. So that's a chance to get to meet Miss McKillop in a very small, intimate social environment, right? It's not formal. We don't ask that you come in a tie or anything like that. And you can just, you know, come and have some tea and maybe a little sandwich of some kind and chat with her. And that's part of the access.
And so this is also a real focus on writing, because, of course, you know, science fiction and fantasy, there's also artwork involved, but there's a whole kind of separate section that's the sort of the media the piece.
Well, yes, but art's a big part of it. I mean, we have our artist guests of honor, Phil and Kaya Folio, who are very well known for their award-winning series Girl Genius, which they originally published in paper form, and they've started serializing it three times a week online. I think it's girlgeniusonline.com, if I'm remembering the URL right off the top of my head. And that's very art-related, although the writing is a very important part of their series, and they will be there. There's an audio element to it as well, because one of the aspects of the Folio's work is that they have written a series of radio plays based on the characters that in their comic book, in their graphic novel series, and they had planned to stage a radio play during the convention. That's going to be one of our big events.
Wow.
I've participated in one of these with them. It's a great deal of fun. It's very enjoyable to... it's hysterical is a good word for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, by the way, something that the audience is expected to get involved with. And indeed, the Folios typically recruit the radio players from people attending the convention who have an interest in wanting to, you know, do you want to read a part in this play? Come and talk to them. So it's a multimedia extravaganza in that respect.
And while we're sort of rolling through our guests of honor, we've talked about Patricia McKillop, who's our pro or author guest of honor, and the Folios, who are artist guests of honor. We have a third guest of honor. His name is Mike Wilmoth. And Mike is an example of fandom honoring its own. So we always have what's called a fan guest of honor. And he's probably not famous outside of fandom at all. But what he has done is he has completely organized Arizona fandom. Right, he has chaired numerous conventions. He's chaired clubs. He's brought them back on the map. He's brought them to the visibility of other groups inside of fandom. And so, he's the complement of these other two.
And so that's kind of nice having a place at a convention that also honors the people who make that happen, the fans.
Right.
Yeah.
That's part of it. I mean, you know, one of the things that we've made an effort to point out is that the words pro and fan are often used in common language as if they were opposites. You're either a professional or you're a fan. Well, that's not really true in science fiction. There are people who are professional science fiction authors and artists, and they act professionally and so on, but most of them are also fans of the field as well.
Well,
and they get involved in it. They come to these events because they enjoy it. Not because, oh, we're paying you a salary and expenses because you got to grind your way here. You know, this is fun.
And it also sounds like your fan of honor this year is also somebody who makes these kind of events possible, which is a great thing for all the lurkers and the shy people to take advantage of.
Right. Oh, and Mike's a wonderful person to talk to, by the way. Yeah, he's like me, a mathematician by training. He's also like me, fond of the bon mot and the pun. And he's really easygoing, so he's very approachable and not at all standoffish.
So this is 89.7 KFJC and Thoughtline. Tonight we're talking about WesterCon 64. WesterCon 64, the 64th annual West Coast Science Fantasy Conference that's happening July 1st through 4th at the Fairmont Hotel in downtown San Jose. You can go to WesterCon64.org. That's the numeral 6, the numeral 4. So WesterCon64.org. And we have Glenn Glazer in the studio with us, and we have Kevin Stanley on the phone talking about science fiction, about fantasies, and about conferences. So how do you find the it sounds like you've got more than enough people who are fans of science fiction who also write science fiction. How do you put together a program of who's going to be the people who talk? Who do you reach out to?
So my goal as chair of the convention is not to do everything myself, but to hire good people. Right. And so that task, for example, the one you just named, is going to be done by my programming person, whose name is Deirdre Moen. And Deirdre, who has worked many conventions and done programming for many conventions, has like a stable. She knows all these people. She has copies of what is called the CIFWA directory, the Science Fiction Writers of America, has a directory that she can get a copy of and write to people. And what she'll do is she'll start by writing to all these people and say, are you willing to come? What would you like to speak on? Here are our themes, you know, kind of thing. What would you be willing to speak on, you know, with respect to those themes? And then from there, it's a kind of art form to take those things and put them together, come up with creative panel ideas that haven't been done before, not the same old thing, you know. I mean, you know, if you go to a convention and there's a panel that says vampires, this subject has been talked to death, right? And but her job, and she's very good at it, is to
bring them back from the dead.
To bring them back from the dead. Yes, thank you. That's a good bon mot. and to come up with ideas that haven't been come up with before, and to work with the people she has, you know, to do that.
So it looks like we've got Dave Clark walking in. Who's going to join us in a second here. Good evening, Dave. Thank you for being here tonight on Thoughtline.
Hi, Duke. Glad to be here out of the traffic.
And your headphones might be exceptionally loud. You never know about that. We have Kevin Stanley on the phone, and, of course, you're sitting right across from Glenn Grazer. So that's all right.
He is my leader.
This is the great. You know what I really like about I like all the mistakes that happen in radio because it's live and it's real.
Well, the reason I laughed actually is that one of the conventions I worked on a while ago, 2007, was in Japan, and what you just said was how every single person on the committee said my name. Which is Glenn Grazer, right? So there was a bit of a flashback to Japan.
You talk about live radio. That is one of the reasons I really do enjoy the radio plays that we do at these conventions. I'm also a fan of old time radio to begin with, so it is a great deal of fun watching these things happen on stage. You might say,
and they're actually in classic radio theater, some of the best radio programs were the science fiction and fantasy programs that were done in the 30s and the 40s. And I'm not talking so much about like Flash Gordon, but Dimension X and Lights Out and things like that.
Got a lot of them here, which were the X-1 were done in conjunction with one of the leading magazines of the period. And a lot of the stories that they dramatized were classic stories of our field.
So I should ask Dave. Dave, how did you get involved with WesterCon 64?
How did I get involved?
Yeah, how did you get involved?
Well, I was on the same I was at the same committee meeting where we were saying we should hold a WesterCon, and Glenn was saying, "Yes, that's a great idea," and I said, "Yes, I agree. You should run a WesterCon."
And so that you you had greatness rest upon you, I guess that's.
Yes, you could call it that.
All right. So what
we call it, he didn't run away fast enough.
And so
Dave is being somewhat modest. He chaired the World Science Fiction Convention put on by our organization in San Francisco back in 1993.
And so how did you come to do that, Dave?
Well, I was working as hotel liaison, and our then current. Convention chairman Terry Biffle was suffering from cancer. So at one point he took me to one side and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Dave, if anything happens to me," and I became chairman.
He did a very fine job of it, and we had over 7,000 people in San Francisco in 93 who had a great time.
Wow.
At about 5,000 in San Jose back in 2002. Won't have quite that big a crowd in San Jose for WesterCon, but it's certainly a much smaller convention. But we took over all of downtown for the WorldCon.
Wow.
Not just one hotel.
And nowadays, and for this convention, we are, even though we are doing other things for the convention, we are also advising Glenn, even if it's only things like, "Don't worry, Glenn, I did that too."
That's right.
Yes, it's supposed to feel like that.
This goes back to what I said about getting good people. Right? That's my job, is to get good people.
Don't panic. It always feels this way. You know?
Well, it is kind of interesting that, if you think about that, you're a kind of a crew of volunteers that are just enthusiastic, passionate about science fiction and fantasy, and that you all have regular jobs and you do this above and beyond what you normally do.
Well, yes, science fiction and fantasy genre conventions, most of them, and there are a few exceptions to this, but most of them, including things all the way up to the World Science Fiction Convention, are completely put on by volunteers. They are among the largest 100% volunteer-run events in the world. I'm told that square dancing conventions are bigger and are also all volunteers. Now, there are some major events that have a small number like the San Diego Comic-Con, the Comic-Con International, they have a small number of professionals but are mostly volunteers. But things of the events we're doing here, well, yeah, we all do this in addition to our day jobs.
For the love of it. I mean, that's the important part, is that we're doing it for the love of it.
So we are fans in the sense of amateurs, and amateur means someone doing something for the love of doing it.
So people listening tonight that might be interested, how would they get involved and volunteer if they wanted to do so?
Write to info@westercon64.org. That's info@westercon64.org, and we'll route it from there.
Okay.
And we do have a P.O. box for the computer challenged.
And what is the P.O. box?
P.O. box is... number 61363, Sunnyvale, California, 94088.
So if you're interested, there's certainly a lot of people. Even though the stock market's doing well, there's a lot of people that are trying to think of how to spend some time other than worrying about all the one ads that don't fit them. So, you know, if you've got some time on your hands, there's no better way than to get involved with an organization, no matter what it is. If it's something you believe in, get involved with it. Tonight we're talking about WesterCon 64. WesterCon 64 is coming up in July, July 1st through the 4th. That's Friday through Monday at the Fairmont Hotel in downtown San Jose. It started in 1948. It's moved all around the West Coast. And this year, it happens to be in San Jose. So we have Kevin Stanley on the phone with us. We have Dave Clark and Glenn Glazer in the studio with us tonight on Thoughtline.
And to go back to your point about volunteering, not only is volunteering for a a convention which supports literacy and as well as, you know, science fiction and fantasy as an interest, and doing a good thing in doing that, it comes back to you. I have learned skills and talents that through running conventions that I never would have expressed in just my day job. I've learned things as strange as drafting, you know, as in on, you know, laying out floor plans. I've learned things like how to negotiate, how to do toe-to-toe negotiation with a hotel, which is, or a convention center, which is not always easy when you're talking about a lot of money on the line. I've learned how to respond to fiery, flamey emails with perfect calm, because that's not easy either. Add all those other kinds of things that volunteering helps you learn. And it's really a two-way deal.
It is really great, because I think that that what makes a whole person is not just what they do at work, is what they do beyond it. And sometimes you learn that much more because you're doing something at volunteering because there's the passion that's behind it. So you can be a little calmer when you get those flaming emails.
I've actually, the what I did as a volunteer many years ago has actually translated into what I do for a living, because I did a lot of with our organizations, I did our bulk mailing, which at that time in particular, very little of it was computerized. You had to do a lot of it by hand, learning zip codes and such. And I now actually work as a professional in the supply chain industry, and we're now having an encyclopedic knowledge of zip codes and maps and such of that nature actually works toward the day job.
That's really amazing. So Kevin told us his first experience of a science fiction convention. Do you have a first experience, Dave, that you remember of going to your first science fiction convention?
Yes, that was What year? 1973. That was WesterCon 26 in San Francisco, California. It was chaired by Jerry Jacks. It was held at the St. Francis Hotel. I had learned about it from watching Creature Features.
Oh.
And Bob Wilkins had Jerry Jacks on to talk about it. And I said, oh, I must go.
I'm sorry I'm not smoking a cigar tonight.
And I won't say I met them all then, but there were a whole lot of people that were in the San Francisco Bay Area that I know now. And I asked them, what was your first convention? Oh, WesterCon 26.
And so it all kind of started there. So how did, if you think of this collection of gas and dust that slowly forms into a solar system and planets, I mean, how did the progression move from going to being a bunch of individuals who went to this one conference to getting connected? How does that work?
Well, I found out about it myself. I mean, I went to these conventions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went down to the Worldcon in Anaheim and had a fantastic time. Now there, we didn't really have the internet and the World Wide Web in 1984. Certainly not the way we have it now. But I picked up flyers for other events. I found out about a convention called WesterCon that was going to be happening in Sacramento. I lived in Yuba City at the time. And that was great. I was going to go down. I went down to that WesterCon. I had a good time with that. And I started going to other conventions in the Bay Area. As you go to one, you found out more of them happening. And I forget exactly how I found out, but I'd heard that a group of people in Sacramento were looking at bidding, because you put in a bid for the, in a sense, you campaign for the right to hold a WesterCon. And I went to that meeting, drove down from Yuba City to Sacramento, and went to the meeting and talked about what we were, you know, what people wanted to do, and as I recall, the biggest deal at the time is that we had lots of volunteers but not much money, and I took out a $50 bill, which I had just been paid for my job, and I said, "Would that help?" And they said, "Oh, that'll help a lot. You know, and if you put it in there, you're hired." You know.
Or to elaborate on my initial story, right, about pushing the donuts around, local conventions, unlike WesterCon and WorldCon, don't move. So year after year, they're usually in the same place, often the same hotel. right? And they form a consistency. So what happens is that you may volunteer and help at a local convention and then come back next year, maybe get a little more responsibility and then run different things, different jobs, do this and that. And as you are doing this year after year with your local convention, you then hear about these other bidded conventions. And so I think that may be the coalescing point for a lot of people is this local convention.
And myself, I was just basically attending conventions, finding out what the heck was going on for the first 8 years. It wasn't until, no, excuse me, 6 years. It wasn't until like 1980 that I got involved with the convention bid. That's when John McLaughlin and company were starting up. Actually, they were bidding for a WesterCon for San Jose. They didn't win the bid. So they said, "What the heck? Let's hold another. Let's do our own convention." They started BayCon.
Oh, so you were at BayCon from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And BayCon is this upcoming weekend, by the way.
Is this weekend?
It's this weekend in Santa Clara at the Hyatt, right by Great America.
So what? I would assume that a lot of science fiction people know about. About these conferences, but what about the people who don't? What would they expect to see there?
Well, the first thing that I think catches like the media eye when people walk in the door is lots of people in costumes, right? So costuming was started by Fori Ackerman, right, at a Worldcon.
Ackerman was at the first Worldcon and attended just, I think, every one of them until he died a few years ago. Number one fan.
Right. And so many people create basically wearable art, right, fabric art, for two occasions. One is wandering around in the halls, what are literally called hall costumes. And some of them are, you know, I've seen people walking around in what they wear at Renaissance Fair, right? And I've seen people wear much more elaborate things.
Actually, my definition for hall costuming tends to be street clothing for an alternate universe.
It's something that you can
wear in public for an extended period of time.
That's a wonderful definition. And the other thing is the masquerade.
I was going to say, you don't have to wear a costume to attend a science fiction convention, but if you do, it's encouraged.
Right. You won't feel alone.
Costumes are admired, not required.
Right.
That's right.
I know the anime fans, now they've got cosplay. I don't know how long they've been doing it, but I just became aware of that term fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I know
it turns out to be a back formation from costuming from somebody who attended the 1984 Worldcon. A Japanese fan went to the 84 Worldcon and was so taken by the costuming hall costumes, he took the idea back to Japan and it back formed into cosplay, costume play.
That was Takumi Shibano.
Yeah.
And I don't think costuming, cosplay or hall costumes are as well integrated into the fandom as it is here, just because it's, Kevin, you were there, back me up, when we did the World Convention in Yokohama, cosplay was more regard. It was basically an organized event in a separate room.
Sort of like that. There was the idea was there's a costume area where you come and show off. It's our Western, if you like, practice of wearing a costume around the event. It was not quite the same. Although you did see some people in it. Although some of them were people like me. Some of the Westerners there being. Acting like Westerners at a Japanese convention. So.
And the other place you will see costumes is at the Masquerade, which is actually, despite the name, a formal costume competition among people who have actually rankings, right, within what's called the Costumers Guild. You have people who are just starting, and then you have journeymen and masters, and they compete within their grades, to be fair, right? Because you don't want a master coming around and blowing a needle right off.
That's right. Steroid abuse is all covered, you know.
Sort of like a weight class.
A weight class, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And so there'll be some number of entries. People will come to the convention and register on site, and then there'll be what looks like a fashion show. Right, there's a runway and a stage, and they will walk onto stage. They will be allowed a short period of time to both display the costume and possibly give a performance of a very short kind. Sometimes they have a little talkie audio, a speech or something recorded that goes along with it so that it narrates the costume and gives it context. And then when each contestant goes by, they'll be judging, and then a rerun with the awards.
And then you can get information about the masquerade on our website at westerncon64.org. One of the tabs across the top of the page is program. We've talked about program items, but there's also, once you press click on program, there's a tab called masquerade under that where you can find all manner of information about the costume contest.
And when we bring up the Costumers Guild, we're not saying that you need to be a member of the Costumers Guild to participate in the masquerade.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
The guild is just the longtime costumers fans who finally decided to get more organized about being costuming fans and basically getting tired of having rules that change from contest to contest to contest.
It's also a teaching organization, so if you're trying to figure out how to get this thing sewn together and have no idea how to do that, or, for example, some costumes involve like molded plastic and things like that, using vacuum molds and things like that, they'll teach you how to do that or how to use a trimmer or whatever, you know.
Wow.
Or if you're dressing as I don't know, a street urchin from Dickens London, you know, how to weather your clothing.
Ah. So the costuming is not necessarily science fiction or fantasy. It can be historic or from a different period.
One of my first ones I took a photograph of was Pat Kennedy as Queen Victoria's Secret Service. Full Tudor with a revolver. So
that's pretty good. That's good.
That is pretty good.
And that's illustrative of something else, which is that there's a deep underlying sense of humor in fandom, right? We love to joke about what we don't take. I mean, people can have serious discussions, of course, but we also don't take. It's not, you know, like a political group or something like that, where, you know, if you waver from the line, then you're an outcast. No, we're perfectly willing to joke about who we are, what we do, the insanity of dedicating whole chunks of our personal lives to this, and so on.
Well, it sounds like also the nice thing too is that in our society we've become kind of a culture of voyeurs. I mean, we look. You know, we don't participate. But it sounds like, you know, you go to WesterCon and you're supposed to participate. You're supposed to dress up. You know, you're supposed to interact. You know, it's allowing people to use the natural creativity and the intellect that they have and to be able to exercise those both.
That's absolutely the case, and it ties in with our convention, and this is one with our guest being Phil and Caiafolio. Their comic book has a great deal of related to what's known as sort of the steampunk movement, which is a fellow traveler of science fiction and fantasy fandom, if you like, and very much a participatory event. When you have these people who are very enthusiastic about this, they're in costume, they're making things. People go to Maker Faire sometimes tied in this movement. We expect to have some overlap with that because the Folio's book is very much considered. They call it a gas lamp fantasy. That's their term for it, but it's tied to the steampunk feeling. My analogy about science fiction conventions is I call it fandom is a potluck dinner. You go to a potluck dinner and everybody brings a dish. And that does mean you'll probably have at least one thing you're willing to eat. And we all bring a little bit of food, and some of the dishes are great, and some of them are maybe not so great. And everybody chips in a little bit to pay for renting the hall where we're eating the food. But we're all pitching in some way, bringing ourselves, helping out, moving chairs around, washing dishes afterwards, that sort of thing.
I think that's a nice summary of these kind of conferences. This is 89.7 KFJC and Thoughtline. Tonight we're talking about WesterCon 64, the 64th annual West Coast Science Fiction Fantasy Conference, which is happening at the Fairmont Hotel, downtown San Jose, July 1st to the 4th. You can find out more by going to westercon64.org. 6 and 4 are numbers. And we have Glenn Glazer, Dave Clark in the studio with us, and Kevin Stanley on the phone. And we're talking about all things conferences tonight. So, you know, what sustains you guys? I mean, we go back to, you know, kind of the George Orwellian 1984. There's a significant amount of time that's happened since then, and you guys are still participating. What sustains you?
Well, there are two forks to that. One is what sustains me as a convention organizer, and what sustains me as a science fiction fan. So, to the first part, I like to be as professional as possible in the jobs that I do, and I take some pride of workmanship in what I do. And when someone walks up and says, wow, that went totally smoothly, or I love this idea, or I had a great time, that's $10 million to me as a convention organizer, right? That's pure gold right there. As a science fiction fan, yes, the way the future was isn't the way it is anymore, but the future changes, right? So the science fiction of today is not the science fiction that I read when I was a kid. It's very different, both in tone and style, also in the kinds of things we talk about. And what sustains me there is that it's always something new. It's always evolving into something new. It is not, you know, someone might have talked about, here's a good example. I have in my pocket right here a smartphone, okay? This smartphone is far more powerful than anything Kirk ever imagined. Really. Aside from the fact that it really can't talk to space because of rage issues, but you could fix that pretty easily, right? But it is still far more powerful than anything he ever imagined with his Beam Me Up, right? On the other hand, now basing their footsteps on the shoulders of what we have now, of the giants that we have now, science fiction talks about other things that could happen or would happen in the future.
And it also seems like that there are a number of writers in the field who have backgrounds in astronomy, in science, you know, that they're physics professors that write science fiction at night. So they're, you know, so it seems like there's also people who are interested in science and can push it with fiction.
And that's true. Actually, we have one of the people who's attended the event many times in the past. He has a T-shirt, and it's accurate. He said, "Why, yes, I am a rocket scientist," and he is. You know?
And the other aspect of this is that nobody can really draw the line between science fiction and fantasy, and it's hopeless really to try to draw a sharp, bright line between them. But also,
it's fun to watch people argue about.
It is fun to watch people argue about it. But, you know, fantasy authors, right? You'd think, well, you know, the Middle Ages hasn't changed much. But it has. I mean, both in our understanding of it, but also in what we think about. And there are people who are trained, are anthropologists, trained sociologists, people who are mythographers, right? Who are now experimenting with myth, right? In the same way that science fiction authors are experimenting with the future. And it's fascinating to watch that development in parallel to the more obvious science fiction route.
And so much of science fiction and fantasy is about people and people's stories and how you can almost focus in on them so much more clearly because they're in these unique or alien situations. Because you don't get caught up in the cars that they're driving, or you know that,
or you can set a setting that enhances a particular point, right? So, for example, there's a classic Star Trek episode about these two guys who are half black and half white, and they're chasing one's chasing the other because he's inferior. Well, can't you tell he's black on the left side? And it's raising a point, a sociological point, right? About to that, particularly in the 60s, that was a much bigger point maybe than it was now, but is now. Thankfully, but that's a way of using the science fiction or fantasy setting to create, you know, a commentary about society and people,
and to talk about social issues that are a lot more difficult to address directly.
Right.
They're pointing at me. Well, I was just thinking, just along the long those lines of Robert Silverberg has done a series of stories based upon the premise that Rome never fell. It's continued up to the present time, and it was writing stories, you know, here and there during its extended history. And one of his stories involved one aliens from outer space came to Earth and found Rome, and they were very friendly until they realized we had slaves, and they ran away.
Mm.
They decided they had wanted nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm. And then he came back in the 60s and lived with Bill Bixby, right? I know that's an obscure reference to My Favorite Martian, but there you go.
Yeah.
This is 89.7 KFJC and Thoughtline. Tonight we're talking about WesterCon 64. WesterCon 64 is the West Coast Science Fantasy Conference happening July 1st to the 4th at the Fairmont Hotel. You can find out information right now by going to westercon64.org. And they'll give you the information you can't. Doesn't look like Larry Niven is going to show up this.
Not this time.
Yeah.
Larry's actually a buddy of mine. I used to go hiking with him when I lived in L.A.
Really?
Yeah. That
and
really...
Larry does normally come to WesterCon. I mean, just not being able to come this time.
Right. Uh-huh. So what's it like hiking with Larry Niven? What kind of conversations do you have while you hike?
Well, most of the time we don't talk about science fiction. Right,
then that's fine.
Yeah, because that's his day job, right?
You know? Right.
And who wants to talk about your day job when you're out in the mountains, right?
That's right.
We do occasionally, you know, talk. I gave him an idea about something, how a series of machines might work together in a protocol. But often we talk about events of the day, politics, things that are going on among people we know. It's really social. He's, you know, pretty much like talking to any other friend you might have, you know. If I might change topics just a
little
bit. Okay, there are a couple of bits of fact data that I wanted to get out before we go. Memberships for WesterCon are currently...
you can find out at the website.
Okay, right. Oh, sorry.
Of westercon64.org. And
that's right. It's listed under registration on the website.
Yeah. That's right. And you can find out because it's sort of like you become a member for the weekend, right?
That's right. You're becoming a member of the West Coast Science Fantasy Conference. Everybody's a member. Everyone has. In fact, we actually do. You do have the right to vote on where we hold the convention 2 years from now. That's one of the things that comes with it. So it's not just an admission to an event. It's a membership in an organization.
Wow. And so just think. You can be younger than 21 and still have the right to vote by being a member of WesterCon. So.
That's right.
And you have voting rights within the convention.
That's right.
So if you go to westercon64.org, you can find out more information there. And another interesting factoid is why don't you mention some of the people you know? You've talked about your three big guests, mm-hmm. That you're honoring this time. Any people you want to mention that are coming that people in the Bay Area might be familiar with?
Well, let's see here. We've got, if you go to the website under the program, when you click on program, there's another tab that opens up under it called participant list, and that's a list of the people who have said they are planning on coming already. I'm trying to think here who might necessarily be heard here.
I'm pulling it up now. This is where the good Lord gave us cell phones.
Ah, excellent, yes. And we also should point out that is not a finalized list. We're still putting together the program. There is information there on the program page. In fact, if you are somebody who thinks you have something you might be able to contribute to us, to write to our program people and make a suggestion, then perhaps you want to come and get involved in that way as well.
And so what is your favorite part, Kevin, of a conference like this?
Well, it changes from event to event. Each one has a little bit different parts of it for me. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the radio plays we're going to be doing this year, although that's partially because I am really personally a very big fan of Phil and Caiafoglio's work. That varies a great deal. There are You know, I like to see the event come off well now that I went with people having a good time. Even if they're not necessarily enjoying the things I tend to enjoy, that's great. I just want people to enjoy it. Because I get together with my friends. Most of my friends, most of the people I know are involved in this community. So one of the reasons I stay involved with it is, well, it's where I meet my friends. It's where we get together.
And there is among other people who are coming, some, to answer your earlier question, someone I think might be unusual. He's a friend of mine by the name of Dr. Lawrence Shun. And Lawrence is a professional neurolinguistics professor. And he's also the founder of the Klingon Language Institute and has written, in fact, the translation of Shakespeare into Klingon.
Yeah, it's only a Galaxy Quest, isn't it?
Exactly. It's best when it's, you know, it's, as was said in the movie, it's best in the original Klingon. And Larry's also a fun guy to be around. He's also an author in his own right. He brings the expertise of one who has helped create a completely artificial language based on random elements that people made up for a TV show, right? Because that's what happens, right? Is that the writers have a dialogue, right? And they have some point where Worf needs to say something, right? Or one of the other Klingons needs to say something, and he'll go, because they'll have just basically invented something. Mm-hmm. And then he's taken all those random bits and fused them into a creative whole that actually is consistent, which is amazing.
That is pretty incredible about thinking how small seeds can grow large oaks.
Yeah.
Fans are very endlessly creative, I believe.
So, Dave, what is your favorite part of conventions?
These days, mostly when it's over and I know that it's gone well.
While it's happening, is there...
Well, for the past few years, I've been working in dealers' rooms. After my job moved to Sacramento, my regular job moved to Sacramento, I became self-semi-employed, and I'm now a bookseller, you know, through the mails and the internet. And I sell books at conventions, and these days, once or twice a year, I wind up running a dealer's room.
Ah.
And when I say dealers, it's what most people call vendors.
Okay. So when you run the room, what do you do you go around with do you speak softly as you're doing now and carry a big stick?
That's mostly before the convention starts. It's just getting it organized and mapping it out, figuring out who's going to show up if you're lucky, running the room is going to be a very dull job at the convention, because if you're really lucky, nothing bad happens.
Okay,
that's right. Yeah, the blessing of the Worldcon or the convention chair is may your feedback sessions be nice and quiet.
Right. Well, let's talk about surprises. What you know, that when somebody goes, and I know, Kevin, when you were talking about the true joy that you had your first conference, what was the surprise that really hit you at that conference?
Well, I was amazed at how, even though I was, a late teenager and really didn't have any ties to much other than, say, my local comic book store in Yuba City, I found that I was in a community of people whom I immediately got along with very well, even to the extent that just standing in line waiting to register, talking to the person in line behind me, it turned out that person knew the manager of the comic book store that I came from and said, who had told me, oh yeah, you should go on down to Worldcon, you'll have a great time. I get into this big hall with all these exhibits about the field of science fiction and fantasy, and I said, man, this is fantastic. I love all the look of these things. Look at all these program items to attend. I can't possibly go to all of them, and there's so many of them that I want to see this information about, and they're going to show these films, and there's all these things. I said, I'm glad I was young and full of energy, because if I hit it today, I'm 45 now, I'd have a hard time trying to do all those things at once, but it just really gelled with me. These are people whom I could talk to, and I didn't have to explain everything to them. We were talking a common language already.
Well, obviously, back in those days, the internet wasn't around, but today it is. You have Facebook. You have lots of different ways that people can connect online. There's games. There's lots of interactive things that people can do online. In the face of that, how has that changed what happens at conferences and who attends it, if any?
Well,
the last Gallifrey was swarming with iPod people.
Well, that and...
By that, I mean podcasts.
Right. That also had a significant media event right before. A guy went on a national television show and basically said, I'm going to this convention, and the convention, like, doubled in size from the previous.
And speaking as one of the vendors, I said, fine by me.
Yeah, right.
So you have... So I would suppose that now you can have people who are twittering about things while it happens, but all of you guys seem to come from a certain age, but the people who go to conferences aren't a particular set. You know, you draw from a lot of different times and ages.
It makes things more interesting for programming too, because if you get a podcast, you know, people, you know, with good experience, good reputation, and they say, I'd like to interview this person for my podcast, on one of your panels, and
okay, it works out really well. So we've run through an entire hour, but I give you guys one or two words about what you like about science fantasy conferences. We'll start with you, Kevin.
Common interests.
Okay. So so Glenn wants to pass.
No, go.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thanks, Glenn.
Dave?
Oh, everyone's it's like Kevin said earlier. It's the occasional sense of wonder. Every once in a while, something will come out and it's new, and you get that first rush, and you go. And sometimes it's just whoa, and other times it's oh, I can do that.
There you go. And so Glenn,
for me, it is community, right? When we welcome and we welcome everyone in, it's a big tent, right? But when you start to go to science fiction conventions, you develop an extended community of friends. I have friends in Japan, as I mentioned, all the way to the UK and other places. And I feel like I'm part of this network and a community of people who love the same thing I do and understand me. And that's totally valuable in this disconnected world that we live in today.
So Glenn Glazer and Dave Clark and Kevin Stanley, thank you very much for participating tonight. Thoughtline, WesterCon 64 happens July 1st through 4th at the Fairmont Hotel in San Jose. Find out more at WesterCon64.org. And coming up next, I have no idea what's coming up next. It's some special because it's mayhem, I'm sure. Oh, my God. What is it? It is High Fidelity Road Atlas. There we go. Art Crimes is going to take us across the country. So thanks a lot. I'm Robert Emmett. And as we tell you each week on Thoughtline, if there's something you believe in, get involved in it. Don't let anyone make up your mind for you. Stay tuned for more of the Month of Mayhem. And until next week, Robert Emmett saying, be seeing you.
As a famous man said, broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills. Welcome to another Mayhem Special. How many could there be? Many, many Mayhem Specials this year. Tonight, no exception, High Fidelity Road Atlas with me, Art Crimes. We're going to take a ride across the USA one state at a time. 50 great artists, 50 great songs. Please, no requests. I've got this all sorted out. And if we have extra time at the end, maybe we'll do some American songs and double up on some of the states. Some of the bigger states maybe get two songs. We'll see. But right now, this is our national anthem for tonight only.